Amnesty's Secret Comedy Podcast.
Hello, Underbelly. Welcome to the Amnesty International Secret Comedy Podcast. I am your host, Tiffany Stevenson. For those of you expecting Susan Cowman, she can't be with us today because she's having a pussy riot of her own. So in the honour of the Manish and Frisky Susan Cowman, here are Frisky and Manish.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
Hello, we're Frisky and Manish. We're here to talk to you about a secret. We're about to reveal a secret, okay? Mm. There's a pop star who's currently performing. She has a secret mentor,
yes.
All right? And we're going to reveal this information. Because it's a secret, we don't know exactly how they met.
No.
So we're just going to imagine that it was something like a scene from an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical.
Yeah. Swinging in the backyard, pull up in your fast car, whistle in my nose. Open up a beer and say get over here and play your video game. I'm in his favorite sundress, watching me get undressed, take that body downtown. I say you the bestest, leaning for a big kiss, put his favorite perfume on. Go play your video game.
Ah, my child, you have done well.
Teacher, you're here. Today might I see your face.
Flattering child, you shall know me. See why in shadow I hide. Look at your face in the mirror. I am there inside.
Your lips are awesome.
Thank you. We begin the music lesson with a scale.
Okay. But I'll guess.
Once there was this girl who
video guys
with the girls in the change room, and where I finally made her. His hair had turned from black into white.
Oh my god, I can't believe it.
They couldn't quite explain it, they'd always just be in
there. I can't believe it. My teacher is, the guy from the crash.
Brad Roberts, come on!
Fade down, fail me now. Your turn, Lana.
Yes. Cause you and I, we were born to die.
Both girl and boy were glad. Cause one kid had it worse than.
Somebody was driven mad by their mentor?
Sarah Brightman.
Sing!
Sing, my angel of music. You are ready.
That's Frisky and Manish there, who smashed it at the Amnesty Stand Up for Freedom gig the other night. Now, I don't know how many of our audience are aware of this, but every year Amnesty organise a comedians versus critics football match, grudge match, whatever you want to call it. Here to tell us what happened this year, the captain of the comedians team, a player with awe-inspiring tackle. Oh, wow. A man who puts the balls into amazeballs. It's Mark Watson.
All right.
Yeah.
I am pretty sexy.
He has just come on in a pack of Mac with a coffee. That is about as sexy as it gets at the Fringe, isn't
it? It is with me, yeah. You guys are lucky. Sometimes there's not even a Mac.
So tell us about the game then. So match report.
Imagine the build-up. Last year we were thoroughly beaten by the critics, and it's a pretty miserable experience because you spend your month also being beaten by critics. So there's quite a lot of... there was a lot of vengeance in the air this year, and there were a number of comedians that wanted to play. It was around about 70. But we checked the rule book, and however you read it, you are only allowed 11. Despite this, the critics have got a couple of really good players, so it was a tense game. We won 4-3 in the end.
4-3, that's very good. Yeah.
I mean, as I said all along, it was all really about Amnesty, but that aside, it was mostly about we had to win.
Yeah. Amazing. So, continuing on a sporting tip, because you clearly like sports, you're doing the Edinburgh Olympics.
Yes, this is the last one is tonight, in fact. It's just been a stupid series of events where comedians compete in a mixture of things like piggyback races. It's indoors, though, so it's very dangerous. There's been some nasty injuries. Balancing books on head, throwing fruit at things. It's been a sort of late-night shambolic mixture of comedy, athletics, and really stupid stuff. It's 11, everyone's drunk, and they have to throw vegetables.
Oh, amazing.
I like to do one thing every year that's really stupid. And
we can call it a dickabout.
It's fine. A dickabout.
Yeah.
And I'm doing another dickabout tomorrow, actually. I'm launching this book of mine, which is about a wedding photographer. It's a novel.
It's called The Knot, isn't it?
It's called The Knot, and everyone has to, well, everyone doesn't have to, but I'm asking people that come to dress in wedding finery, and we're doing a sort of mock wedding at St. Stephen's Church. Anyone here fancies getting married? I think there will be someone there that can actually do it.
So, yes, yeah. Amazing.
Or just fancies going to a wedding, anything. Yeah, so that will keep my quotient of dickabouts up for the month,
For the dickabout. Just really, really enjoying the phrase dickabout.
Yes, I don't think it's gaining much traction with the audience, unfortunately.
No, it's not, but as long as we're enjoying it.
Tiffany, we're loving it.
Yeah, next year's show, Mark Watson, dickabout.
I do have a tendency to... I've done an awful lot of odd things at the Fringe over the years, and I think it's important that somebody... keeps that. I mean, I'm not the only one. There are people like Simon Munnery, Arthur Smith, but Smith's going to be arrested sooner or later. Amnesty will be fighting to break him out one of these years.
So will you stick with us, Mark? And we're going to have a bit of stand-up now. She's warmed up her funny bone. She's ready to tickle your ribs. Please put your hands together. Clap, cheer for the fantastic Jessica Fostercue.
Hello, welcome. Are we well? Good. In the spirit, as Mark was saying, of all the performers obviously still needing to be quite loose and have fun and still dick about, my favourite thing I've seen so far at the festival has been a local joining in with that fun spirit. As I arrived here on the train, I got off and I immediately went and stood at a bus stop, and there was a man who, clothes-wise, totally normal. It was daylight, so everyone could see him. And out of nowhere, he got out a can of squirty cream. And just went for it. And I thought, fuck, good on him. Do you know what I mean? A lot of respect for that lack of inhibition and that joining in. I thought, that's power to him. It's possibly one of the coolest things I've ever seen. But then I had a closer look, and it was lighter fluid. Always got to remember we are still in Scotland. I'm a big fan of oxymorons. To me, they're words that are told that they're not supposed to be together, but then they do it anyway, and I think that's a little bit romantic. It's lovely. Do you like oxymorons, sir? Yeah? Do you know what they are? No. If you don't know what they are, an oxymoron is a phrase that contains a contradiction within itself. So the standard examples are things like deafening silence or nice tracksuit. There's a lovely one on Wikipedia, Microsoft Works. Personal favourite of all time, though, Fun Run. Walking's lovely, why rush it? I've got a great joke, actually, about the Jurassics. I've got a really good joke about Edwardians. Sadly, I can't tell you either of them, because the first thing they teach you at comedy school, as a woman, not allowed to do period jokes. I got a groan! First groan of the podcast. Boom. Apricot, that word originally comes from the same root word originally as precocious. Fine, but if I was going to have any fruit down as being smug, I'd have gone for mango. It's talented, it's delicious, but you get the impression it knows it. Just a little bit. To be amused, which is kind of what we're all here for, to be amused originally in its first ever form just meant to stare gormlessly. It did. So actually, my career is going much better. Glorious. I will leave you with that. Thank you. Enjoy your time at the festival.
That was fabulous stand-up. Give it up for Jess Fosterkew. Now, I'm very excited about our next guest, and I think some of the gents of a certain age in the audience will be as well. She knows what to do with some double-sided sticky tape and an empty bottle of fairy liquid, and she's a fantastic actress and great presenter, and she looks absolutely radiant today. Please put your hands together and welcome to stage a fantastic Janet Ellis. Well, you came in going, I'm all a fluster and it's raining and everything, and you just look glowing and gorgeous. And I went,
I'm really jealous that you can challenge the critics to something, though. I couldn't play football, but I thought, I was sitting there thinking, what could I do to really get competitive about it? I think probably ironing. Because I'm really good at ironing, and I bet they're not. So I'd have a row of nice shirts, they wouldn't. It would be quite satisfying.
It's just never become the spectator sport we all thought it would.
Do you iron, Mark?
Uneasy here in the middle of some ironing stroke feminism talk. No, I think it should be a choice for everyone.
You're pro-ironing.
I have to say, I don't iron a lot, and nor does my wife. And in fact, in general, I find it kind of a peculiar thing to do. But if I got pleasure out of it, that would be different. It's just.
I'm so sorry about this. Was there anything else you wanted to ask me?
Yes, I did. No, I do want to ask you about
your play. I feel I've derailed things a bit here.
Not at all, no. It's important that we're all reminded of ironing, because days go by and you don't even ponder it at all.
No, no. Janet, you're in a play called Hell's Bells by Lynn Truss.
I am.
How's it going?
It's going really well. So I'm skipping around going, ooh, Edinburgh. Although I noticed this week that everybody has a distinctive laugh which ends in a wheeze, because everybody has got the Edinburgh cough, haven't they? So there's a lot of sort of in the audience. He's the laughing, but, you know, we have to pass the Benadryl round afterwards. Or any other cough syrup. I worked for the BBC for a long time. It's a trigger reaction.
Yeah,
it's quite full on, isn't it? The first time you do the Fringe, have you been doing the hardcore partying?
Well, I am. Let me just remind everybody, a grandmother. So yes, I have. There's no point in not, is there? Really? I'll probably never come back again like this. I'm sure it won't be asked back. So I'm getting it all in now. Yeah, late nights till about 12:15.
What is it about, Janet?
It's one of those fake audio commentaries for a DVD for a series that never existed called Mrs. Milliner, and it assembles some of the characters who, 17 years on, have no particular reason to like each other, and it's also about hats. Yeah, lots of hats.
Yeah, not enough people talking about hats as well as ironing. Clearly.
I'm really making this sound exciting. What's your fringe? Ironing, hats. Early nights. No,
I think Edinburgh's like the theatre of dreams. That's how I feel when I come up on the train, because it's the open, isn't it? In golfing terms, it's the open. Anyone can come, so you get some magnificent stuff, and then you get someone doing a poo in a bucket.
Yeah,
and people will go and pay to see that. You know,
not enough.
I didn't have great reviews for my show last year, so
the Fringe is the place to try these ideas out.
Yeah, the hopes and dreams.
This is Amnesty International's Secret Comedy Podcast with me, Tiffany Stevenson. Mark Watson is here. Janet Ellis is with us too. I'm going to ask you in the next section to reveal some secrets to us. But first, we're going to have some more stand-up comedy. Please welcome the delightful, the hilarious, the Sony award-winning podcaster, Miss Danielle Ward.
Hello. And my show is about all the jobs that I've had. And the last job I had before becoming a stand-up comedian was the economic researcher at the South Korean embassy. Yeah, that's a pretty cool job, isn't it? Not home economics like my physics teacher would have thought back in the day. Because I'm really used to calling it the Korean embassy rather than the South Korean embassy, because that's what you have to call it, you know. South Korea and North Korea are names imposed by the West. South Korea is actually the Republic of Korea, and North Korea is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. And the way you remember it is that if they have to put the word democratic in the title of a country, it generally isn't. That's how you remember. I thought it was going to be such an amazing job, and I've been there a week, and this genuinely happens, so you can put it out in the podcast because it's not libel. The ambassador brought me up to his office, and he said, I want to go to the Edinburgh military tattoo, but I've looked on the map and I can only find Edinburgh. Is that the same place or a different place? And I went, oh, it's the same place. And he said, can you please check? And I don't know how you meant to check that bit of information. I said, no, I can't check, it is. And he said, are you absolutely sure? And you know you get that thing going, well, maybe it is a different place. Maybe I've been mistaken all this time. And in the end, he made me ring up the Scottish Tourist Board and say, you know Edinburgh? And they said, yes. I said, is that the same place as Edinburgh or is that a different place? And it is the only time anybody in the public sector has ever told me to fuck off. So well done, Scotland. So I thought it was going to be a really cool job being an economic researcher. And my main job was getting rid of the mice in the file room. I went down one day, right, and they caught a mouse in a glue trap, and I'd never had to deal with a glue trap before. So I thought, oh, this is a little mouse caught in a glue, and they really squeak if they're in a glue trap as well. I thought, oh, I'll try and free it from the glue trap. And I looked online, and you can't free a mouse from a glue, you can cut its feet off, but that's not gonna help it. So I was like, oh, I'm really squeamish. I didn't want to have to kill this mouse in a glue trap. And there was a patch of grass outside the embassy where loads of cats came along. So I thought, I'll take the glue trap outside, leave it on the patch of grass, hoping a cat would come along, go, I love mice, and here's one that can't even run away. This is the best day ever. And it was out there for about half an hour squeaking away, and my diplomat was going, you have to deal with that mouse, I can hear it squeaking. But again, I didn't want to have to kill it. So I went and got a small can of tuna fish, opened it and lay it in a circle around the mouse. Hoping that a cat would come along, go, oh, I love tuna fish, and there's a mouse for dessert. This is the best day ever. And it was in there for another half an hour. No cat had come along. So I dropped a paving slab on it. And that is the end of that story. Hey, life doesn't always hand you punchlines. Sometimes you just have to brick a mouse's head in. Thank you very much.
Up for Danielle Ward. I loved the end of that story there because it sounded like a horrific Blue Peter. It's amazing the different ways you can dispose of mice. My boyfriend had a humane trap, which he said we should use to, you know, to dispose of them humanely, and he did pretty much the same thing. Trapped it, then beat it to death with his shoe. That kind of counteracts the point of having a humane trap, doesn't it? So is this in one of your shows, Speakeasy or Play Dead, this story?
It's in Speakeasy. Speakeasy is about all the jobs that I've had, and Play Dead is a collection of four horror stories, but they're funny, don't worry. It's really good, because when you do stand-up, what I've realised is you can't really do stuff about decapitation in a normal stand-up show, but you definitely can in a ghost story.
Janet, you and your daughter, you're feminists, aren't you?
We are, yes. Yeah, involved with the Fawcett Society.
And
yeah.
I think we've got a fairly feminist panel today. And obviously, I don't know if anyone saw this yesterday, but Todd Akin made a comment. He basically said that it was impossible for women to get pregnant if it was a legitimate rape because the body has a way of shutting itself down. So there's some kind of way that you can rape-proof your vagina. You just have to hate the guy enough. and automatically that will happen.
Men find it extraordinarily difficult to, I don't know, I'm generalising, to empathise with that notion because generally, and of course there are male victims of rape, but generally that act is a physical one perpetrated on women.
Yeah, I think he was using it to justify his pro-life stance. So he was saying he was absolutely, totally against abortion. And they said, what about in the case of rape? And the fact that a comment can be made like that by someone in a position of power, yeah. Horrific. Yes, there's some people in the front row going, God, it's fairly awful.
It is.
I think the backlash from both men and women against Todd Akin's comments has been pretty swift. That's been the refreshing thing about it.
That's true.
I think it's harder for people to get away with truly stupid or damaging comments these days. Twitter and Facebook and things have got a lot to answer for, but at least when something like this comes out, Witch Hunt is launched fairly quickly. Sometimes it's damaging, but occasionally you feel it is
justified.
Yeah. I think it would be good if comedians stopped making jokes about rape, even sort of with the ironic clothing that those sort of jokes are often wrapped up in as well. There's a fair amount of misogyny still in stand-up, which hasn't really got any place in the fringe. And if it was the same sort of joke applied to racist or racial groups, for example, you'd never get away with it. But certain comics tend to sort of step back from it and say, just lighten up, ladies, it's all a joke. And with a bit of luck in this climate and with the backlash against people like Todd Akin, people might start realising that you can't sort of casually touch on these sort of subjects in comedy. Or if you do, you better really know what you're talking about.
I think the problem with a lot of the rape jokes I've seen in comedy is that they're done by performers who kind of have the impression that they're being edgy and talking about a taboo subject.
Yeah.
But there will be people in the audience who have been abused by their partners.
Yeah.
In the same way that if you do a joke where the punchline is, oh, I've jizzed on a homeless man, if we're being edgy.
Or I killed a mouse.
Yes. People haven't done that, and so it's quite frightening how much that is considered a taboo when actually it's a very, very common thing that happens.
Yeah. In any of the two shows that you're doing, do you have any secrets? Do you reveal any secrets? Or do you have... Because this is part of the podcast that we are asking our guests to reveal some secrets. We've had some amazing ones. We had one from Claire Sweeney, where apparently she got chatted up by Bill Clinton. Yeah, that's pretty, yeah.
There goes my story.
So, I don't know, do you reveal anything in the show? Have you got any great secrets?
There are no secrets in the show, but, right, I really love the Olympics. I was really into it. And so I tweeted all the way through the opening ceremony, and I tweeted all the way through the closing ceremony, and I was quite drunk. And you know when Russell Brand came out doing I Am the Walrus, I tweeted, I've had sex with him. But who hasn't? I mean, come on. And I couldn't, you know, when you think, oh God, I really shouldn't have written that. So that's my secret.
That's amazing. What I liked about that was that one person in the audience was impressed. Just one woman.
I know. Everybody else was disgusted and appalled. Quite right too.
Have you had sex with...
No, but I do think he's attractive. I genuinely can see it from a woman's point of view. And I've been, you know...
He's quite snake-hipped, isn't he?
Yeah, and he's got a certain sort of rough... earthiness despite
STD
all the
STD charm.
Yes, yeah, it's got a certain disease ridden appeal. I can see why he works his magic on people. Definitely.
How long ago was that, Danielle?
This was in 2004.
Janet, how do you feel about Russell?
Russell?
Do you
think, yeah. No, I know he casts his net pretty wide, but he
has. Oh, thanks, Janet. But,
just saying. No grandmothers so far. So, you know, maybe this would change his mind.
Have you got any grandmother secrets, Janet?
Well, I had to choose, really, because this was thrust upon me when I came in. And I'm not going to name names. I
can't keep saying thrust when we're talking about Russell Brand and sex.
I can. So there's sort of oblique secrets. Like, I did have an affair with a Radio 1 DJ. I'm not saying which one. No,
was
I'm
it
not.
Smash or Nicey?
Well, thanks. No, I'm not saying which one, because I'm never going to write it, but I like to think all this is grist for my autobiography.
Chris Evans?
Should we just keep guessing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Tony Blackburn?
Yeah. No.
Oh. No. Hang on a minute.
No. You'd be able to tell. If you ever named him, I would blush. So.
Well, that's why we're trying. Yeah.
DLT.
But,
oh, no, go for that.
But we do want to get a confession out of Mark Watson.
What's Never mind that. I'm just trying to think who else has been on Radio 1. this is follows on from Danielle's mouse tale. I was once in trouble with the law over a dead mouse because same thing, we used a humane trap, had the mouse in the trap, but it was quite firmly wedged in there. I had to dispose of it somewhere. So I went into, this is in South London, and I found this sort of area of bushes around a church. It shouldn't have been a church looking back, but there we go. And I was like shaking this mouse trap. The mouse was wedged in there. And these two cops approached, said, excuse me, sir, what are you up to? And I realised that they'd just seen me sort of...
In a bush.
I had to wander around. Luckily, I said, oh, I've got a mouse in a trap. And they fell about laughing. And the guy said, oh, we thought it was much worse than that. So I was this close to being convicted of wanking into a bush when really I was just trying to dispose of a mouse corpse.
Apparently that's part of the thing when you get these mouse traps is that you are supposed to shake them to disorientate the mouse then let it go and it can't find its way back.
Oh. I've never actually heard of a glue trap. How
does
it not? No.
Oh, it's a little cardboard thing. It's got a layer of glue and the mouse gets stuck. Ooh. And then you have to smash it. Yeah. Hey, I didn't invent them.
Really, Amnesty should be involving itself with
this. Yeah. Yeah. I feel it's a big cause. So, now we've made it very heavy. We're going to...
Good luck, guys.
We've warmed them up for you.
We'll close the show with another song for Frisky and Manish. So we're going to raise the roof, raise your spirits, and welcome back to the stage. Clap cheer for the fantastic Frisky and Manish.
Lovely. Well, hello everyone again. Isn't this good? No, we wanted to round off with one final big secret from the world of pop, which concerns Rihanna. Yes.
Rihanna does not write her own songs. Okay, that's clearly not a secret. What is a secret, however, is who does actually write her material. And we're going to reveal this information to you with a very rarely heard original demo version of one of her biggest hits.
Just time to thank all my guests today. We've had Mark Watson, Janet Ellis, Danielle Ward, Jessica Fostercue, and of course, Frisky and Manish. I've been Tiffany Stevenson. Thanks a lot for listening.
I'm Richard Melvin, the producer of this secret comedy podcast. We really hope you liked it. Amnesty stands up for freedom of expression. If you want to continue hearing Hugh Edwards say things like Pussy Riot on the 10 o'clock news, then you need to do your bit to help us. You can do this by texting the word SECRET to 70555 to donate £3. That's the word SECRET to 70555. Texts cost £3 plus one standard message. Refer to your tariff for details. Amnesty UK receives at least £2.85 from every £3 donated. Over 18s only. Please ask bill payers' permission. See full terms and conditions at amnesty.org.uk/SMSterms. Go on. You know it makes sense.
Amnesty's Secret Comedy Podcast is a Dabster production for Amnesty International.